Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
All right, and we're back. We're joined with sales enthusiast, mixed martial artist, and the second Canadian we've had on the show this week, Kyle Norton. Kyle, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, some of you might notice if you're watching the video that Kyle's actually sitting in my normal spot and I'm facing our gym here. He's actually in Vancouver this week, and so he decided to come swing by the office and share some coffee with us. Thanks for coming down, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited.
Awesome, man. I'm going to jump right into it. What is the one thing that you do that you feel has made the biggest contribution to your success leading an outbound team?
I would definitely say it's a focus on always learning, constantly picking up new stuff wherever I can get it. So reading as much in the sales world as I can, listening to podcasts like this, and as well talking to as many people that I know are awesome about what they do. And as well, you know, you asked the question in leading outbound teams, but also getting as much insight as I can with people who are in functions that are maybe similar, but not quite the exact same as what I'm doing. Because I feel like in sales, sometimes we get into an echo chamber and sometimes everybody's going the same way, doing the same stuff. So being able to bring in outside ideas is really key as well. So getting outside of your comfort zone as much as you can.
Can you give me an example of what one of the outside ideas that you've brought in recently?
Yeah. So, I mean, I love Tim Ferriss, for example. He's got all sorts of stuff about how to learn stuff faster and really focus on mastery. So those are all ideas that are tangential to the sales world, but obviously are extremely applicable. Any type of success-focused authors or reading is really key. So one of the things I recently picked up is how to stimulate creativity. So a repeatable process, because, you know, as sales leaders, you get really dug into the minutia of the job. So your dashboards, your reps, your calls. And sometimes it's important to step back and say, okay, what are the really important things at a high level we need to focus on? And then doing some reading, getting some insight, sleeping on it, and then waking up early and then having a clear mind to go focus and think about something, as opposed to drilling in and getting lost, coming into your important problems with fresh mind. It's a process that I picked up from one of Tim's recent podcasts a couple of weeks ago.
Sure. So you're more of like a book reader, listener, and podcast. Do you have a favorite source, blog reader, newsletters, social, magazine?
All of the above. Maybe not magazines, but basically everything else. I mean, obviously read Predictable Revenue early in my sales career, and that made a big impact. But then the pack gets onto it, and then it becomes more the sales community or the prospect community gets more used to it. So you got to learn new stuff. You know, your new book has a lot of new stuff. That's great to include. Guys like John Barrows, I'm obviously a big follower of, blogs, podcasts. So stuff like this is great. The Bowery Capital podcast, Saster. There's a lot of good stuff out there, but it's about making it routine as well. You know, my routine is I wake up, throw on a podcast in the shower, have some time to sort of get my mind into it in the day. You'd be surprised how many ideas come out of that period of 30 minutes that might be a total waste.
I can already tell you don't have kids.
I don't have kids. Yeah.
I already know that. Yeah. Cause okay. Continue. Sorry.
No. So just reading and soaking in as much as you can at all times is really key.
Awesome. Because you didn't include the word diaper?
No.
Yeah.
I got two dogs, but they're very low maintenance. No diaper changing there.
Yeah.
Cool.
I got woken up this morning in a stupor by some baby crawling around on me. God knows what time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Awesome. So focusing in on the sort of sales development process. Can you walk us through, like, how does where does your process start? Who does it start with? What are some of the metrics that that you like to see?
Like a snapshot of your funnel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're in the employee benefits space. So it's a pretty broad spectrum. You know, most of the time we're trying to get right to a business leader. So founder, CEO, CFO, sometimes heads of HR are certainly key in the conversation as well. The conversation's always, do you go bottom up? Is it top down? Everything. You know, if you can find a bottom up champion while you start to nurture a senior relationship, then that's always great. Certainly having a refined workflow that you use repeatably is super important. So we're a sales loft shop, which makes that pretty easy, making sure that we've got something that we consider to be best in class. And in terms of touch point 1 through 12 over 12 business days is our cadence.
Can we dive in on that? Yeah, like walk us through, like, what's a day in the life? Like, how does somebody get into your sequence or cadence? And then, like, what are some of the actual activity goals for your sales development reps?
Yeah. So on the workflow side, it's always call with a voicemail first, getting that familiarity, somebody just hearing your voice, seeing the number come up, so that when an email comes in, there's that, you know, mere familiarity effect from psychology that we're hoping to take over. So you'll increase your open rates. And obviously we want to have a conversation. That's the best case scenario. So it's call the voicemail, email on day one, really personal, but super light on the, we are League Benefits, we are the digital alternative. Like no elevator pitch, just something interesting. The impact we've made somewhere.
So can you elaborate there? Like, this is, hey, we've, you know, something interesting. I just read, I saw this cool cat picture on BuzzFeed, or
not quite. So always something about,
dude, was that you drinking on the office Christmas party picture I saw on your Instagram feed of Big League? Of League?
Yeah. So something that's relevant and personal to them, obviously. No one cares about what we do. No one cares who I am. They only care about their business. So talking about something that is tangential to what we ultimately want to speak about, which is benefits, but we're not leaping in with something that's in that specific area. So, hey, notice that you posted an article about this to do with culture, or this to do with workplace productivity, or I see you're connected to this person. Obviously there's a lot of research that shows common connections, common groups on LinkedIn, companies that you work with that they've worked at in the past are some of the proven best reply rate drivers. So a very quick line about something that you notice to show that you're human and you're interested in them. A one-liner about impact that you've made with a company similar to them. So you can call it hypothesis of need or shared truth, or basically your value statement. You're a CEO, and we have this CEO came to us with this problem and we did this, but super short, not overly verbose or wordy, something that's conversational. And then an offer of value. So this is, you know, the words we use in accumulation make a big impact. So people say, oh, you got to have a call to action, got to set a next step. But that's really about us. So when I frame what we want to be doing at the end of a conversation or an email, it's not a close, it's not a call to action, it's an offer of value. What am I offering to tell this person or show them in exchange for 30 minutes of their time? Hey, I'd love to show you how they address this problem, what the process was for us to solve that with them, and not want to see if there's want to see if we can do business together, or want to see if I can help you. There's got to be a more distinct offer, because really you should be calling people that you have a strong hypothesis that you can help. You know, we have unlimited tools out there to be specific about who we're pitching. So I should, as a salesperson doing my work, know that I can probably help you before I pick up that phone. A lot of the time, not all products, but what am I going to help? What am I going to give you for free in that conversation, in exchange for, you know, having a chat?
Awesome. So step one, call with a voicemail.
Yeah.
What's next?
So, yeah, step one, call with a voicemail. Same day as that intro email. Day two, we'll call with no voicemail. Day three, we'll simply resend that first email. The slipped by you is always the highest reply rate thing in our entire cadence. So, hey, just wanted to resend this in case you missed it. I know you're probably busy. Let me know if you have some time later this week. So that's day three. And then nothing on day four. Day five, we'll have another call. These are business days, not calendar days. Day five, we'll have another call. And then either a more challenger focused email or a value add. So, hey, saw this, thought it would be valuable based on X, something they shared or what you know about their company. Mm-hmm. So you can interchange, and it's been hard to discern whether or not the challenger before the content drip performs better. So it's a bit of a feel thing. Then the challenger email is something where we're getting more to the point. We're trying to now that we've built a bit of a digital relationship, we know that a lot of our prospects are reading our emails and just not replying and potentially clicking on stuff. So we're trying to get more focused on a problem that we can solve. So it is pain focused. This is something that we know people struggle with. If you see this, then it's probably something that we can help solve. We should have a conversation. So it's getting a little bit more forward. And then there's a LinkedIn ad shortly after that. You can shoot them a quick note on LinkedIn saying, hey, just wanted to fire you a note. I sent you a couple emails, not sure if you saw them. So we're getting an additional touch point. You know, as many tools as we can is great. And then you're moving into maybe a couple more calls and some Twitter interaction if you can, as long as it's sort of a tier type lead, we'll start doing that level of effort, and then a professional persistence email. So much like, it's a little bit like the breakup email. We don't use the humorous breakup email. It's more of a, hey, I hope you can appreciate my professional persistence. The reason that I did want to make another attempt to connect is, and then it's something that is as impactful as you can be. And then that's where you're saying, you know, if it's not of interest, just let me know and we can part ways. And that's basically the cadence. Yeah.
Gotcha. So it's always phone first and then it's strictly email and social afterwards.
No. There's calls interspersed.
There's some calls in there.
Yeah. So I think there's five calls of the 12 steps. And you'll turn that volume up and down based on their seniority or how targeted they are. If you have a really good angle, if you know that say you've talked to somebody in their organization, you know that there is a problem we can solve. So say for us, if we know that their benefits plan isn't great and their employees don't love it, then we'll really make an extra effort. But yeah, you'll have different, we'll have different varieties of cadences for different tiers of prospects. If they're really good, if we know there's an angle, if we know that they're in our ideal customer profile, we'll spend a lot of time on them. And there's some stuff that's pure email, you know, pure email cadence to somebody who's a little bit more junior, interested in having a conversation. So we'll have a lot of stuff going at any given time.
Awesome. Just like to pull on that thread a little bit. You mentioned the A tier. How do you guys organize your prospects, your campaigns, or however you see them?
So a lot of that we leave in the hands of the rep. So they're going to have probably six cadences at any given time. So you've got, you know, a more automated cadence for more junior prospects, the A tier cadence with a lot of touch points and a lot of personalization for people who are great. You've got an inbound web follow-up cadence. And you're basically, in Salesforce, most people have lead grades. And so you're just going to sort your list view by lead grade, click for us, click to import. these are import to Cadence, throw them into whatever Cadence they need to go into, and then go back to lead research and then move over whoever else you need to move over.
Gotcha. And so you organize them into like the, I guess different levels of prospects. So you've got A tier at the top, then junior, then inbound, then like, how do you define those and what sort of, what determines whether or not a prospect's going to be A tier or junior?
So we have a pretty specific profile that we want to go after. So there are certain industries that we know are awesome for us. They are younger in demographic. They're competitive hiring and retention markets. It's a company that we feel makes culture and the workplace a priority. So and then anybody, CEO, CFO, or head operations person, maybe a senior HR person if it's a larger organization. And then there's other companies that we think we can do business with, and it's probably pretty good, not the bullseye. And then it's really determined by the reps where they want to shift people. Something I did a lot more of at my last company, Vision Critical, that was purely enterprise focused, was also breaking out account-based cadences. So having a cadence only for Coca-Cola, and then Coca-Cola marketing, Coca-Cola product development, and then having a pretty broad proliferation.
How would you manage all those cadences? And that sounds like a lot of overhead, but.
So we had a naming convention that we use. So basically you'd have a number of master cadences. So the standard one is the one I described, but then you could have a master inbound follow-up cadence. And then you're just going to label by company, by function. Through a software, doesn't get too out of control, because you just, all the rep has to do is find the lead, pick where that lead needs to go. And then when you go to your dashboard in the morning, it's telling you what you need to do. So for example, if we wanted to pitch, let's use the Coca-Cola marketing example. We're going to take our core marketing master cadence. We're going to duplicate that. We're going to change the first email and the challenger email to things we know about Coke, for example. So we know that they were doing X restructuring, or they have these corporate objectives. And so using tools like Seeking Alpha. So you go to Seeking Alpha and use their investor call notes, and you just search for keywords like marketing or brand. You see what's going on to tie back that product, which was customer intelligence, to something that we know is important at a corporate objective level. And so it's just duplication. It's a little bit of modification, and then you have that thing ready to go. And you're going to run. You only do that account approach when we know that in Coke marketing, there's like tens of people that are relevant. Like there's enough prospects to precipitate that level of work. But then you hit go, and your dashboard tells you what you need to do on any given day.
Gotcha.
And then with the account-based approach, then you can add in stuff that's even more high touch. So one of my guys had a lot of success with old school veto letters, very important top officer letters. So they wrote a letter, signed it by hand, sent it by FedEx in the hard large FedEx thing, and then called right after they knew it was going to be delivered. So that was a very senior person at a big retailer, and it was a meeting that was of huge value for the company. So you're just going to keep adding more and more effort as people are more and more important. It's like Jeff Bezos flamed that guy on Twitter because he sent him that stock email saying, "Hey, I don't know if we work with companies like Amazon." You got to be careful that as you're going up the chain, you're putting in the effort in to get that quality of meeting.
What in general, again, this sort of snapshot of the funnel, I send these calls, emails, what are some of the sort of main goals for the month, either in volume of accounts or emails or calls or X or qual, you know, either what would become qualified meetings or SAL, SQLs, or what are they working towards for the month?
So in our environment now, we want the BDRs to be generating 20 qualified sales accepted opportunities. So things that have gone to demo and are qualified on an ANIM criteria. At Vision Critical, it was 5 because it was purely enterprise and it was much more difficult. And then it's basically a work back from there into the little mini sales development funnel. So if you need 20 SQOs, then we know we're going to have to line up. We're going to have to book 25 demos because you'll have some demo attrition. And depending on the rep, they'll take 60, 70, 80% of their intro discovery meetings that get to demo. And then you just have a work back from there. So in general, I like my BDRs to be working 80 to 100 leads at any given time. So we have a 2-week cadence. It's a 12-day, 2-week cadence. So you can roughly have at the upper end, 100 leads move through your process if you're doing properly.
Accounts, you mean?
Those are leads.
Companies or people?
Those are people. So then fewer people, accounts. Okay. So we'll in a 100-person organization, we're only going to work 2 or 3 people. In a, we have a specific angle for a company that we know is really qualified, then maybe we're working like 5 or 6 people at any given time. The junior benefits, the payroll person, the CEO, VP of HR, CFO, VP, there'll be a whole full court press. And, as your reps are more experienced, I don't worry as much about that metric. I worry more about what's coming out, because if they're going to be more targeted and work fewer leads but better, I'm okay with that. We have to be careful that as we try to be data driven and process oriented, we're not painting every rep with the same brush, because your year and a half tenured enterprise BDR manager doesn't really need to be doing that same level of volume as a junior person that just doesn't have the same hit rate.
So, and how many people are on your team, and do you divide them up into segments in any way or not?
Yeah, so we have a team of 10 reps now. So 6 AEs, 4 BDRs. We're not doing any really formal segmentation. Previously at Vision Critical, I had 25 reps in North America and then a smattering globally, and then they were all vertically aligned. So we're moving in the new year to a pretty standard SMB mid-market enterprise structure, as we're taking our team of 10 and we're hiring 11 BDRs and 11 AEs over the next month and a half. So that's when we need the refinement in terms of who's doing what and how we're segmenting. Right now it's I was saying to Colin earlier, you in your book, you talk about those 4 types of sales VPs. And we feel like we're trying to do 3 of them right now. So we're evangelizing, we're trying to build a repeatable system. We're also doing a bunch of experimentation to see how far up market we can go. So we haven't put a lot of shackles on people in terms of who's doing what, because we don't know yet. Maybe we can go do a deal with a true enterprise type company. So I want people to have the freedom to experiment with 10 to 20% of their time. Let's not invest entire weeks on experimental stuff and risk burning a good chunk of time. But I encourage all my reps to do at least 10 to 20% of the people in their funnel as things with an upside if it works out. And that's worked awesome for us. One of my fresh new reps straight out of school, super bright guy, went and got us meetings with 1,000 person companies, and if we'd put him in a box, he would have been doing SMB mid-market stuff. So he used his experimentation time, and we got revenue, we got big revenue out of it.
Great. That's Last question here. We mentioned Canadian prospecting, prospecting in Canada. Are these businesses all in Canada? Did you say you're going to move in the U.S.? Not there yet? And if so, how do you send them emails? Which is, for those of you listening, cold emailing in Canada is, you know, banned or supposed to be.
Yeah. So this is the first, time in my career that I've actually sold exclusively to Canada. I've always worked for companies where, you know, in my last team out of 25 guys, one guy was selling to Canada. So, there's a lot of ways around CAN spam, which is the legislation or CASEL, the legislation that you're referring to.
I always get those two mixed up.
Yeah. Especially, I don't do much Canada stuff. You know, LinkedIn is a good tool to communicate with people because, it doesn't fall under that legislation. Asking for emails on the phone. So if you want to send the CEO an email, calling the front desk and asking for that email, if it's given to you, then you're allowed to send that correspondence. And I think a lot of it as well is if you're out there flamethrowing an industry and just emailing everybody with no value add type stuff, then yeah, you got to be a lot more cautious. If you're emailing people with a targeted approach and, you know, they can appreciate it's personalized and you're here to help and you're coming across in a genuine, not crappy way, if you do it respectfully with some humility, then you don't really have much concern. But yeah, certainly you have to have your opt-out links in there. You've got to be careful where you're sourcing your emails from. And treating people with respect as well. It's the same thing with the States. I know there are restrictions, but you don't have to be as worried as long as you're not letting your reps just go send out thousands of emails at a time to a blanket prospect list.
Mm-hmm. Right on. So we got, just want to keep us on track for time here. I have two last questions that we want to sort of wrap with here. Can you tell me about something that you screwed up when you're building your first outbound team?
Oh, where to start? I think one of the most important things and one of the things I'm most focused on now is the culture that you set within your team. As a new manager, moving up and having a team, you know, it's really easy to be way too intense and set a metrics only type environment and forget that, you know, these are people that you're working with. And so one of the things that we're really focused on is making sure that we have an orientation as a team that, gets people to prospect the right way and go about their business in a way that is good for the client and good for us. You know, the thing that's always thrown around is, people don't need salespeople as much anymore. So I think creating a culture where people are encouraged to have some experimentation and, be empowered to be creative and work really hard. You know, we have an environment where we all are charging pretty hard, but it's a servant leadership mentality. It's not a top down micromanagement style. And I think for sure, as an early leader, I was trying to set too much of a pace and push myself too much on people, and really like get them going by. Really pushing and pushing and being metrics focused and breathing down people's necks. And certainly like that in a long-term, to build a sustainable large team where you're going to have great leadership talent coming out of it doesn't really work. So I would say that's definitely a big thing and something I work with my reps on all the time.
So when you were in the early,
don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I mean, it seems like an obvious thing, but the interesting thing about sales is to be a great rep, you have to be really selfish. You have to be focused on yourself and your your funnel and really doing your thing. And it's hard to make the shift to being now 100% outwardly focused. You don't matter anymore. No one, like, I'm not doing any actual work. I'm not picking up the phone. I'm not the one emailing and hustling. I get on a lot of calls. I mean, I love being on the phones with the guys, but like, they are doing the hard work, and having that servant leadership mentality is certainly something that takes a little bit of time to get used to, because you're vulnerable. Like, if you empower your team and you lay off the metrics a little bit, then you become vulnerable. Then people might not do it. You expose yourself. And I feel like that's a hard thing, especially in sales, where it's like very ego driven and there is this sort of machismo. To be vulnerable as a leader, I mean, it takes a lot. And but once you start letting go a little bit, you see it's like, wow, these people are actually super enthusiastic about what we're doing and are working as hard as I could have possibly asked, and are doing it in the right way. I feel like that took, you know, it takes a while to get used to.
Cool. So don't be an asshole and treat your team like adults.
Yeah. I mean, even farther than that, you know, be there as you know, you work for them, they don't work for you. Because it's not enough to just like let them sort of do. You got to be there to support and help coach and catch things that they might not otherwise have seen, and really be, that's why my title is coach. Not like a standard title, because that's how we want to frame it. Like, that's how we want to frame my responsibility and what I'm supposed to be doing. It's as a tool there for them.
Awesome. I'm realizing just before I ask you the last question, we did forget to get to our gratuitous product placement segment. So you were telling me a little bit earlier about League, because we're on Great West Life, and so we're paying like a fixed amount. And I think you compared it to buying insurance for your car in case you need to get an oil change, or buying insurance on the oil change. What was the analogy you made there?
So we're the digital alternative to health benefits. So on top of fixing the experience of insurance. I know everybody out there has tried to file a massage therapy claim and gone through the hoops and all that. That's terrible. As opposed to, you know, us, it's like Uber. You book your service through the app. The money comes digitally out of your wallet to the provider. You have all the tracking and paperwork done for you. But more importantly, especially for employers, the financial model of a traditional insurance plan doesn't make a ton of sense, because you're insuring stuff that isn't inherently risky. So your example of the car, for sure, it's insuring somebody's vision care is a little bit like getting car insurance for your tire rotation and your oil change. Why am I going to go pay you $125 to pay my mechanic $100? That math doesn't make a ton of sense. Well, you're doing that. Like, I get contact lenses $100 every 6 months. Why would my employer go pay $125 for that coverage? Because they're paying a risk premium, but, you know, vision care, massage therapy, chiro, physio, like, those things aren't inherently risky. So you don't need to pay that premium. So instead we move those types of expenditures into a health spending account, which is fully flexible. Your employees get to choose what they want to spend it for. So instead of, you know, little categories of $300 for this and $500 for that, with an 80% copay, instead we say, okay, here's $2,500 in a health spending account, and spend it on the things that make an impact for your life. Whether it be, you know, a bunch of physio because you got a bad knee, or you want to go get laser eye surgery, it gives the employee flexibility, and then it's pay for use for the employer. So if people aren't using it, or I'm a healthy guy, I didn't even touch my plan for the last year, then they wouldn't be paying for that coverage until I access it. So,
cool. Yeah. I think we'll have to introduce you to some more people when we finish up the call here.
Sounds good.
Awesome, man. Yeah, you got me. So final question here. What's one sort of more advanced tactic that you might recommend for our more experienced sales development leaders? What would you recommend they try? Like, what's one thing that's really, really worked for you?
That is a good question. I don't know how advanced it is. So one is have conversations. Like, you know, when you ask your first question, ask a second, ask a third. Like, don't feel like you're asking questions just to then get onto what you're trying to pitch and wait for your turn to speak. I think that's one of the things that takes people from like pretty good to being an all-star rep at finding deals that can be closed. The average SDR is going to ask their very baseline qualifying questions and sort of move on and be like, oh, great that you said that because blah, 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 blah. So instead, really focus on just having genuine conversations, understand where you're trying to get to in your talk track. Don't lead with stuff that's directly related to your product. So for us, we're not leading with, tell me about your benefits plan. It's what's happening culture-wise in your company. What are you trying to achieve in the organization from a people strategy perspective? And then that tangential stuff will eventually lead to how benefits and wellness can help. I would say that's a pretty good strategy for middle of the road reps to get to that next advanced level.
Gotcha. So to summarize, sort of like paint me a picture of your organization first before we start diving into the things that I want to talk about or the things that are related to me selling you something.
Yeah. Figure out what's important that isn't directly related to you, because what's really important to me is employee health benefits. That's what we're selling. That's what we're all trying to do, but that piece may be top of mind and really important for a prospect, or it might be much lower down the priority ladder, or it might be, we just raised a big round and now we need to go hire the best people in the city to do X. So we can certainly support something like that and help people recruit and retain from a wellness perspective. Or it might be, wasn't a great year. We have to look at all pieces of the business and save costs. We can also have a pretty big impact on that. But or maybe it's just stuff that has nothing to do with us, but it's good to understand. It's good to understand the world of your prospect and as many non-selling conversations as you can have with your prospects is great. So something that we're lining up for Q1 is bringing in heads of HR and business leaders from around Toronto to talk about their business and people and culture and their companies and have nothing to do with benefits. Like, don't come in and tell us what's wrong with benefits. That's not really what's important. We want to understand what's important to our buyers in general. Like, you'll have better conversations. You'll have a better ability to understand where your product fits or doesn't fit. Like, I would say that's another advanced, like, even really good reps have a lot of trouble with is qualifying out. The product is not always a fit, and especially selling in Canada, like, people aren't going to tell you no. People are going to let you talk and maybe have another meeting and then go dark and let you call them and chase them. Like, that's a more Canadian thing than the States. But having an understanding of, okay, even if this is a really good company on paper and you're talking to the CEO, if like very clearly there's way bigger priorities on that person's plate right now, maybe this isn't the best person for you to spend your time, because what's the one resource that you have as a rep is your time. So investing that and not being afraid to qualify out and say, timing's not right, rather than spending half an hour writing the ultimate objection handle email and try to cram a product down somebody's throat and then calling another person in that company to see if you can restart it. You want to hustle and you want to do those things. You want to do those things as much as you can so that you're not leaving any stone unturned. But if you have one conversation and clearly there's other more important things going on, or there's other priorities with an organization, then put it on the shelf for a little while. Go do the hard work to research and have new conversations and try to find somebody that you can help. So qualifying out, I would say, is another big thing. Because especially in sales, you say, oh, you got to be hungry. You got to hustle. You got to like keep pushing and pushing. But sometimes you got to know when enough's enough and you got to move on.
Spend your time wisely.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Kyle, can't thank you enough. That was such a valuable piece that I think took me a long time in my selling career to figure out. And I really want to thank you. I think this has been a fantastic episode. Really want to thank you for being on the show today, coming down to our office, drinking our coffee, spending some time in this cold gym of ours.
Yeah. My pleasure. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Right on.